Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, when I'm doubtful, I tend to believe my own eyes. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
I'm Joe McCormick. And today, the eyes have it because we are going to be talking about your eyeballs, one of our favorite things.
Yes, two of them in some cases. But we're going to be talking about...
So tender and delicious.
Yes, you know, everybody has a favorite snack, right? So we're actually going to be talking about contact lenses specifically here, because there's been a little bit of information in the news about some high-tech contact lenses. We kind of wanted to explore that and talk about some of the different approaches to contact lenses of the future. And we've got a couple of different perspectives on this. I guess that's sort of a pun. One of them being under Google's version, and then some other versions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it ties into some other things that we've talked about in past episodes.
Oh, yeah. We talk all the time on the show about wearable health monitors and also about augmented reality. And contact lenses could potentially provide new intros into both of those.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's really, potentially it could be incredible technology for large populations.
Yeah, I mean, if you thought people were obsessed with their phones, wait till they don't even have to hold it in their hands to browse Twitter.
Now, you say that, but I remember everyone giving me funny looks when I was sporting the Google Glass.
But that's because you were sporting the Google Glass. It was a big thing that people could see.
Let's be fair, Joe.
On your face.
I was rocking the Google Glass.
Okay, you were. Okay. You were rocking it extremely hard, and you looked so cool. Everybody was like, who is that man?
Man, makes me sad that I had to give those back. So let's talk about Google's approach to contact lenses, because it is different from their approach to Google Glass.
Well, yeah, and one of the big differences is that Google Glass, you might say it was essentially an augmented reality... I don't know. Would you say augmented reality?
I'd say it was a very early implementation of some augmented reality. It was really more like a second screen.
Yeah, put a screen in my eyeball.
Yeah.
My eyeball is the case, maybe.
But I think you could see what they were going for. It was trending toward augmented reality.
Yes, definitely.
So the principle of augmented reality is different than virtual reality, just for those of you who don't know. Augmented reality is that you're basically perceiving reality as it is, but with some things added or modified.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Some sort of overlay on top of it. Now, with Google's contact lenses, at least in the short term, the near term, they don't have anything to do with augmented reality at all.
Right.
Instead,
it just happens to be a thing that goes on your eyeballs.
Yes. Yeah. And it happens to be provided by Google.
Yes.
So, but this was something that was publicly announced on January 16th, 2014. There had been some rumors that Google was working on something that had to do with contact lenses before this announcement. But it was made public on their blog. Google employees Brian Otis and Babak Parviz jointly published a blog post. They were the, or still are, I assume, the co-project leaders on this. And they worked in Google's X division. Now, the Google X division is no longer a division within Google. It's actually...
Sure, they're not.
Well, no, they're still associated with Google. It's just that now you have a new parent company called Alphabet.
Uh-huh.
Google is one of the subsidiaries under Alphabet. Google X is a second subsidiary. The idea being that now Google X can continue to do research and development, but not have to answer to the other company of Google in order to do so. Like if big Google does poorly, it doesn't affect Google X, in mm-hmm. other words.
Okay.
So if they're working on futuristic contact lenses,
yeah,
and they're not expressly or primarily for augmented reality, you know, not for making people's Tinder profiles pop up when you look at their faces, what exactly are they for?
Something that's really cool, and it goes back to what Lauren was saying with the sort of the health monitoring systems that we've been looking at in the past. In fact, it has a lot to do with that. The contact lenses incorporate sensors and circuitry and microprocessors in order to monitor something about either the person who's wearing it or the environment that person is in, and then send that information to an actual device that would do the processing part, like the real data crunching part, that would then display information either to that person or to someone else that, like an expert, like, for example, with health, it might be to that person's doctor. The idea being that it could create a very early warning system in a lot of cases, and really monitor at a precise level a person's health, mm-hmm. From moment to moment, give real-time updates. It's a really cool idea. Now, the main purpose they talked about in that blog post was to help people who suffer from diabetes, because obviously diabetes, it's a huge problem, mm-hmm. Particularly here in the United States, and it's a problem that can lead to very serious health complications down the line if you aren't treating it properly.
Sure, and it can, especially in people with type 1 diabetes, lead to extremely serious consequences moment to moment when their blood sugar spikes or drops.
Exactly, right. So you want to be able to monitor your glucose levels, mm-hmm. and normally the way you would do that is you'd have to take a blood sample and then
it's
put
pretty
that,
obtrusive.
Yeah, right. And they said, you know, this is something that plagues people who suffer from diabetes. It can become a disincentive to keep up with your glucose levels, mm-hmm. which could lead to disastrous results. So what they wanted to do was develop a sensor that could detect glucose levels in your tears as opposed to your bloodstream.
Sure. And that's not just when people with diabetes are like listening to a lot of Morrissey. You
right.
always have tears in your eyes. They're called basal tears. And those are a substance that have glucose and a representative amount of your blood glucose level in them at all times.
Right. And one of the criticisms that I've heard directed at this approach is that the level of glucose present in your tears is different from that is present in your blood. So there's some people who question how accurate this contact lens can be. Like, how much does your glucose level have to change? Like, how dramatic must the change be before the sensor picks it up?
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously something that will be worked out if and when this moves on to a testing phase with the FDA. And we'll talk about that in a second as well. But beyond checking your glucose levels, it can do other things. But I'll talk about that in a second. Google, in order to do this, has partnered with another company called Novartis. And they gave a very conservative prediction that the contact lenses would be available sometime around the year 2019.
Now, you say that's conservative. Why do you think it might be sooner than that?
I think the technology will be ready before that. And that's based upon just the fact that not too long ago, Google had an internal document talking about what would be interesting ways to package these contact lenses.
Right.
If you're thinking about packaging, you're probably getting to a point where the technology itself is pretty close to being ready.
Yeah, but then again, you could think about that era of Hollywood where they had a poster before they had a script for a movie.
You know what? You are entirely correct. That is absolutely a possibility.
And whether the technology is ready or not, as we've talked about on the show before, it's really a quite laborious process getting something approved for medical use in a human population.
And mm-hmm. and we are thankful for that laborious process.
Oh, yeah. No. Yay, laborious in this case.
Yeah, because it means that you are more likely to have something that has real efficacy as opposed to a placebo or something that, you know, is telling you, yes, I'm going to alert you in the case of a medical emergency. And if it doesn't work, then real people suffer because of that.
Oh,
now,
sure.
I wonder if it would be easier for them to get it on the market faster if they marketed it as an extremely crappy augmented reality device that just happens to have a bug that measures your glucose.
Well, we've seen cases of where a drug that was intended for one use ends up finding incredible success marketed for another use.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that wouldn't happen, although they could say, hey, these are contact lenses that are like a thermometer. It can tell you your body temperature and if you are having a fever or if your body temperature drops, because that's something else they could do. They could incorporate a sensor that's a very basic thermometer. It's actually a circuitry component that changes shape with the temperature. You know, it'll expand or contract depending on the temperature.
At particular levels, basically, like at certain temperatures, it will basically phase change.
Kind of. It's a resistor inside the circuit. So when the resistor expands, its resistance changes.
By
measuring the change in resistance, you can determine what the temperature is.
Yeah.
Which is really clever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you could market it as this is a very interesting thermometer that you wear on your eye. Also, it'll tell you if your glucose level drops, y'all. But I mean, again, it all depends on what kind of sensors are incorporated. They don't go so far as to say all of this is going to be in a single pair of contact lenses. It may very well be that these are specific types of contact lenses, some of which may never come to market.
Yeah. Right? Now, this is a very impressive and daunting engineering project to get something as tiny as a contact lens to do something like this and to stand alone.
Right. Because you don't want to hook up a coax cable to your eyeball.
Yeah, you don't want to have to have a power extension cord going to your eyes.
I've got to plug my eyes in.
I actually kind of want that, but that might just be the cyberpunk in me.
That's more of a Shadowrun kind of thing. You know, when we're rolling our dark elves who need to go and what is hacking called in that game? I forget. At any rate, the way that this works, well, first people were guessing that it was going to run off RFID. That was going to run off radio frequency, actually, not RFID in general, but radio frequencies in particular. You would put an RFID antenna as part of the circuitry. Here's the interesting thing about radio frequencies. You can actually harvest electricity using an antenna, you know, to pick up radio waves. This is abundantly clear if you ever pick up a very basic radio kit, which tends to have a crystal and some wire that acts as an antenna, and then you hook up another into a speakers or headphones,
mm-hmm.
you don't need a battery. You can actually put the headphones on and hear radio transmissions, assuming that, one, your antenna is long enough, and, two, that you're close enough to the transmission source. And that's why, you know, while you can harvest electricity in this way, it's not the way we distribute electricity. It's not the way we have a power grid set up on this, because it's incredibly inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you wanted to broadcast electricity, you would have to have incredibly powerful radio broadcasts. You'd need to be close to that broadcast source, and everyone would have to have these enormous antennas to pick up radio waves.
Yeah, and it would be decreasingly effective the more walls you were behind.
Like,
I'm picturing us needing to have a transmitter like in this podcast room,
right?
In this like nine by nine podcast room.
I mean, it's like filling up a drinking glass with a lawn sprinkler,
right? And it's not just that it's inefficient in that matter. It's also that you're just losing so much power. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not conserving energy at all. It makes no sense to go that way. But for something as small as a contact lens, if your device that you're using to communicate back and forth between the contact lens is able to emit radio frequencies, it could presumably be a method to power this stuff. And in fact, that's what everyone thought it was going to do back in the day. If you go, at least at the time of the recording of this, if you go to the Wikipedia page for this, it's still how Wikipedia believes. I say that as if Wikipedia is a sentient entity.
Wikipedia.
I fear you. It's still the way that the Wikipedia entry says the contact lenses will get power. However, according to a patent that was filed back in July 26, 2012, that is not the case. The patent, one of the inventors cited in the patent was Bob Otis, the co-project leader. And they instead looked at using...
Let me guess. Radioisotope thermoelectric generator.
No.
No?
Excellent guess, however.
Onboard fusion reactor.
No. A flux capacitor. No, it was none of these things. It was instead light.
Oh, okay.
Just pure light. So the idea being that you would have a photoreceptor that could convert light into electricity. Very small.
So like a solar panel in your eye.
Sort of. Although it doesn't necessarily have to be light from the sun. It could be, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. And the idea being that the little photoreceptor would not just bring in light to generate power, but also would feed that data to the microprocessor. And if the light coming into your eyes is modulated so that it can hold data.
Like those smart light bulbs that we talked about a couple months ago.
Yeah, or like really, if you think about it, it's like a very advanced version of a Morse code lamp that by flashing the lamp on and off, you're sending a coded signal. Just make that way faster and the signals are just a series of zeros and ones.
so fast that you cannot, in fact, tell the difference in your brain.
Right. And it might even be at a frequency that you can't see, right? Mm-hmm. It could be infrared light. So you wouldn't even see it in that case. And in this way, your contact lenses will be able to communicate to another system. So we mentioned the idea of using these contact lenses to monitor your glucose levels. What would happen is that your contact lenses would be getting data from your tears about how much glucose is in your system and send that information to the microprocessor, which would then send a command to some sort of emitter. It would either be something as small as a very tiny LED light. In other words, your eyes will be shooting light out of them, not necessarily light you can see. Again, it could be infrared.
What you're saying is that this isn't going to turn everyone into Cyclops.
No, only a few fortunate people will get the kind where you can see like red light coming out of their eyes. I can imagine that happening.
Is that what the X in Google X stands for after all this time?
It stands for X-Men.
Yeah.
It's the X factor. I'm not going to say one way or the other. All I can say is that I know a guy who works for Google and he gets real quiet when I ask him these questions. But he also finds me intensely irritating. So the other way that it could work, as opposed to having an LED light, it could have a reflector inside the contact lenses. And this would be like holding up a mirror to signal someone by reflecting sunlight toward them. Again, kind of like in Morse code, but much faster. Another modulated light source so that you could send data back and forth. They even go so far as to say that if you wanted to get really fancy with this, you could have photoreceptors that are capable of picking up different colors of light, and each color of light could represent a different data stream.
What?
Yeah, think about that. Like, you could end up having the ability to accept multiple levels of information through your eyes. I mean, we do that anyway. But, I mean, the contact lenses could. But all of this would just be so that your contact lenses could send that data back to another device. Because, as we've already mentioned, this particular implementation that's described in the patent doesn't have any kind of display built into the contact lens. So you wouldn't see, like it wouldn't come up with a warning in your vision saying, hey, your glucose levels are too high or too low. Instead, it would send that information to some other companion device, which would then either alert you or a caregiver or whatever.
Yeah, like basically like send a text.
Yeah.
And be like, hey.
Yeah. Jonathan needs a cookie.
Yeah.
Or whatever it may be. So no, you don't have direct communication from the contact lens itself, but it is monitoring your activity, just whatever the sensor is designed to do, whether it's
your
glucose
inner bodily activities. Yeah. And what are, okay, so we talked about temperature. We talked about glucose levels.
Yep.
What other things could it be looking for?
Well, other sort of chemicals that are in your body that are present in your tears, technically any sensor that could detect those could be incorporated into these contact lenses as long as they could be miniaturized to that degree. So, but beyond that, I mentioned that these could also detect things that are in your environment, not just the stuff that's inside your body, but the stuff you come in contact with. So you could have sensors that pick up on things like hazardous materials that, let's say that it's a dangerous gas that you would otherwise be unable to detect on your own.
Or how about like warning, there are bees in your eyes.
That probably they're not going to go that far. I'm going to get, now allergens they do look for.
Right.
But that's different than bees. When you're allergic to bees, we'll have a talk.
Not the presence of the bee.
Yeah, it's not like you're all Nicolas Caging it out or anything
that I'm aware
like that.
Of.
Yeah, no, it's.
I don't know. I wonder if like bee dander is a thing.
Well, I mean, if bee dander is essentially pollen, so.
Oh, actually, yeah. In that case, it would be like, Joe, there's bees in your eyes again.
Well, I guess it would be Siri telling you, right?
We need to.
Or
a,
no, not Siri. It would be Google.
Yeah. We need to A, have a talk about your life and your choices, and,
right.
And B, like, go take a Zyrtec.
Uh-huh. Yeah. This is sounding like a terrible Sandman comic to me right now. I'm honestly, I just. bees in the eyes.
They're in your eyes.
Well, they could have sensors for allergens. So let's say that you are really allergic to certain types of pollen. You could have sensors that are incorporated into your contact lenses that could alert you if you were coming into an area that has a lot of it, which could tell you to, one, either get away, or maybe you need to pop an antihistamine so that you don't
move out of Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah. In Atlanta, it would just say, just don't even bother going outside. Just stay inside from the months of like March through July. Then it could, but again, other hazardous stuff like, say, carbon monoxide, you could have sensors that pick up on that and alert you to that presence. Beyond that, you could have lots of other stuff. You could have, like, you know, the temperature, the heat sensor, letting you know if someone is having a fever spike or their body temperature drops suddenly. That's a really useful ability. But there are some other ones that are a little less medical in nature and possibly more commercial and or troubling. Like Google has said that one of the things this could do is be a way of authenticating someone's identity or ascertaining that identity. So maybe not just authentication, but identifying a person.
So sort of like a smart chip in a credit card.
Yeah.
But it's just in your eyeball.
I guess. I assume it would also be based on your body chemistry that would, alert people that, yes, this is in fact that person. It seems a little Orwellian to me. Now, honestly, I say that.
Blood alcohol content is 0.8. Must be Jonathan.
Yeah, that's me. I'm the one. I drink so much, I'm dead. oddly enough.
Yeah, that's pretty easy.
I think I meant to say 0.08.
Yeah, no, 0.8 was like insane. I was like, I'm 80% alcohol. And I'm fun at parties. So at any rate, it's a little troubling, but the patent doesn't go into great detail about how it would actually do this. I don't know if any of you guys out there have read patents. I know that my coworkers here have read through patents before. Patents are meant to give you an overview of how a certain technology is supposed to work. And in return, you get protection for your approach to that technology for a certain amount of time. But that information is publicly available.
There are also sort of practical and commercial concerns at play in the creation of patents.
It behooves you to not say too much because as soon as you say something, it can, for example, I think that the makers of WD-40 have never patented their recipe basically because they don't want anyone else to copy it.
Right. So if you're able to keep your trade secret secret, it might be better not to patent it. But even if you do patent it, there's nothing about, you can be a little vague with your language, which sometimes means that you're like, okay, I see what it's supposed to do, but I still don't see exactly how it does that thing. Another example of that is this idea of pairing the contact lenses with other outside products. They specifically talked about, they use the term merchandise item. So I was just imagining going through a store and looking at stuff on a shelf and it somehow is able to, the contact lens is able to recognize a product some way. Maybe it's the way the light's reflecting off the product.
Maybe the packaging has another little RFID transmitter thing in it or something.
That's
like
true.
That.
It could be an RFID antenna instead of a light sensor in that case.
Well, wait, couldn't this... Well, I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, depending on what the capabilities of it are, couldn't it also just respond to a visual code, like a barcode or like a QR code?
Yeah, except that what do you build into the contact lens that can see the code, right? I mean, unless you're scanning something so that the code changes from dark to light to dark to light to dark to light for your photoreceptor, you'd have to have some sort of camera-like device incorporated into the contact lens, and
I would guess the future trending pathway of this kind of technology would be towards some kind of photosensitive camera type technology in it, right?
I suppose so. I just don't know of one that is miniaturized to that degree.
Sure.
No, certainly not.
But at any rate, so you're looking at a merchandise item. Why would they care about that?
Yeah, they could pair it with things like coupons so that Google makes money with these contact lenses by essentially selling ads, except you're not getting hit by advertisements so much as you're getting the opportunity and I use that with air quotes, to use electronic coupons for various products you come in contact with. Again, they don't go into detail about how this would actually be, how this would be incorporated, but they mention the possibility of it, which I understand. I understand. I'm not a fan of that idea at all. I don't like the idea.
Oh, man. I think it's beautiful in its Discordian, just absolute future hell concept.
I mean,
that's wonderful.
It's been a few years since I've had to put contact lenses in because I got LASIK eye surgery, so I don't need contact lenses anymore. I just think back to when I was first putting them in and how much of a trial it was to try and get contact lenses on my eyes. And I think, would I go through that trouble for advertising? like that to me is like, well, that's, I don't know that I don't know that coupons matter that much to me.
I mean, would we go with a subsidized Kindle type?
Yeah, that's exactly
here?
What I'm thinking.
So
is that if your
smart
contacts
are cheaper.
Yeah, you get the discount contacts if it allows you to, you know, if you're browsing through the supermarket and you look at a certain brand of crackers for long enough, you get a text that's like, hey, I see that you're interested in these chicken crackers.
Chicken crackers?
Man, I'll finally be able to afford Ritz.
Yeah.
What are chicken crackers?
Oh, chicken biscuits.
Yeah, you've never seen chicken crackers?
What are you talking about?
It's chicken flavored crackers.
Yeah, these are things that exist. I have eaten them.
Okay.
For the record, podcast listeners, Joe is horrified right now.
Perhaps, or at least
more
perplexed.
Made with real chicken feathers.
They also make shrimpy chips. That's it's more of a Asian thing. But yeah,
okay.
They're like Korean little like shrimpy cracker puffs.
Yep, they do taste vaguely ocean like.
I'm a big fan of them. I can't buy them because
now,
I'll eat a lot of them.
Gotcha.
Would it be ethical to design a contact lens that causes piercing, stabbing pain in the eyeballs if you don't buy what it recommends?
I think you've answered your question already. Because whenever you have the question, would it be ethical to, and it's followed by the phrase stabbing pain, the answer is pretty much always going to be no. Unless it's prevent stabbing pain, in which case the answer is probably yes. Well, one of the other things I want to mention is that almost all of the coverage I see for these contact lenses brings up the possibility that maybe one day it will incorporate some sort of display technology. So
yeah,
you would get that augmented overlay in your vision.
I mean, that's the obvious thing. When you say Google's working on smart contact lenses, everybody immediately assumes what they're talking about is some kind of augmented reality thing.
Right. And the patent does not go into any detail on that side at all. That doesn't mean that Google's not thinking about it. It doesn't mean that they aren't working on the technology. It's just not described within that particular patent. It also, to me, would suggest that they would have to look into some other form of generating power for the contact lenses beyond harvesting light energy. I don't think light energy would be – I don't think there's any way you could build photoreceptors that are efficient enough to convert enough of the light into energy, electricity, to power any kind of display, even keeping in mind it's a very small display because it's right over your eyes.
Yeah.
I don't know that you could do that just with light alone. You might need some other power source. Maybe RFID or maybe something else.
Plug your eyes in.
But we've got other discussions about contact lenses that are more in that augmented reality realm as well.
Yeah. A study that was published in January 2015 in the American Chemical Society's journal Applied Materials and Interfaces describes a proof of concept material that could be used to coat contact lenses, potentially turning them into wearable screens.
Awesome. So this wasn't so much about the contact lenses themselves, but rather a different material that you would have to find some way to bind to a contact lens.
Exactly, yeah. The stuff is highly conductive and also hydrophilic, which in practice means that it won't electrocute you.
Yeah, in biomedical terms, avoiding electrocution is what is considered a good thing, especially with the eyeballs.
Yeah, yeah. it's basically a clear film that's a potential circuit.
Awesome.
So the study is called Hydrophilic Organic Electrodes on Flexible Hydrogels, if you happen to want to check it out. And the research was led by the University of South Australia's Future Industries Institute, which is a thing that exists, which is really exciting to me, in collaboration with other materials tech researchers from around the world, and also a UK contact materials manufacturer called Contamac Limited.
I love the idea of a future industries institute.
I know, right?
Like, you could just come up with any industry that doesn't exist right now and say, one day it will. It's going to be a future industry, my
virtual
friend.
Virtual reality dog grooming. It's the future.
It's a thing. So is this stuff on the market right now, or?
Despite the fact that they were working with a contact materials manufacturer, no, not at all. It's totally not ready for the proverbial prime time yet. They've created this stuff, and they've proven that it can be used to coat the type of hydrogel polymer that is commonly used for contact lenses.
Well, that's a good step.
Yes. The next step is creating a technique that'll get it to stick to contacts,
mm-hmm.
also important.
Mm-hmm.
Then make sure that it lasts an appreciably long time, despite the rigors of being in constant contact with fluids, mm-hmm. which is what makes nearly everything in the universe break down.
Right, right.
Then work on manufacturing processes that'll make it mass producible, and simultaneously develop compatible technologies to power the material and allow it to be used to monitor biosigns, as in the Google contacts, or to create a kind of display that you can look at with your eyes.
Well, it's cool that they're looking at this material science approach. I think that's really neat. I mean, it's very different from the approach that Google's doing, where they're looking at incorporating circuitry kind of around the pupil of the eye.
Right, right.
So, you know, you don't see it because it's around the part where
it's over your iris.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is a slightly different approach where it could be incorporated direct, especially if you can create transparent circuitry.
Mm-hmm.
It's all overlaid on top of your eye, but you just see right through it unless they activate it as a display. So we talked about those looking into different ways of powering it. You saw something that was really cool that, you know, it's not relying on light. It's not relying on radio frequencies. It's relying on something else.
This comes from one of the lead researchers of the study that I was looking at, and he mentioned in an interview, I believe with Mashable, something like that, that this could be combined with technology that allows us to power electronics through human tears.
So, since we've already established that there are always tears in the eyes, I was going to make a joke about seeing sad movies and then you could finally power your electronics, but obviously That ship sailed a long time ago. This is really an interesting idea because you've got your renewable resource right there as the user.
And it's tears.
And it's tears.
But it's the tears that are always in your eyes. It's not, not that you're just like, you have to carry a picture of a little sad kitty cat and look at that and you're like, all right, now I can use my augmented reality contact lenses again.
Oh, time to recharge. Got to watch the end of Homeward Bound.
Hang in there, kitty. Just keep hanging in there.
Just let me put on Moulin Rouge for a minute. I really need to send a text.
That definitely makes me cry, but not for the reasons you're talking about.
Okay, that's an argument for another day. No. So researchers are pursuing enzymatic biofuel cells, aka EFCs, and these work basically like other fuel cells. We discussed a whole bunch of fuel cell technology in an episode back in January of 2014 called "Are Fuel Cells the Future?"
Mm-hmm.
And that was a long time ago. Maybe we should do an update episode on that.
Yeah.
And you guys, if you have not listened to it, you can go back and for a full take on how that technology works. But very basically, how fuel cells work is that you get two substances together that create an oxidation reaction, thus freeing electrons.
Yep.
Right? If you can figure out a way to make those electrons flow from the oxidation site, that the cell's anode, to the cell's cathode, you've got a current.
Yeah. It's very similar to a battery, except, of course, a battery generates electricity through an electrochemical reaction that produces an excess of electrons. The classic fuel cell that everyone hears about is a hydrogen fuel cell, where you have hydrogen on one side of an electrolyte catalyst that blocks electrons from going through, and you have oxygen on the other side the hydrogen and oxygen want to get together. So what you get are electrons dumped out through a kind of a back channel. The hydrogen and oxygen atoms get together, and then the electrons go through the channel doing some work along the way and rejoin to create water, which is why in your classic hydrogen-based fuel cell, the output you get electricity, you get heat, and you get water vapor. That's not the case of every single fuel cell. Obviously, there are other chemicals, but that's the basic idea. And it is different from a battery, but in both cases, you're generating electricity through a chemical process.
Oh, right. And one of the chemicals that's commonly used in most fuel cells is some kind of metal to help kick off that oxidation process. It's going to free up those electrons. But EFCs use stuff that that commonly occur in living organisms, like glucose, which we have already covered, totally occurs in your tears all the time. Also stuff like lactate and adsorbate, apparently.
That's much better than having to rely on something like platinum, which is what a lot of fuel cells use. It's also incredibly expensive.
Oh, sure. Something like nickel that's a little bit toxic to human people.
Yeah, so that would not be great.
Right,
Don't want to put that in your eyes.
No, no. So back in 2015, a team out of the University of Utah published their research involving a prototype contact lens that, when they set it in a bath of artificial tears, put out a little bit more than a microwatt of power consistently for about 3 hours. And if you're wondering what's about a microwatt of power, it's about enough to make an LED flash occasionally. So not quite ready for your eyeballs yet.
Right. Like
in order to do anything appreciable other than make your eyes flash occasionally.
Yeah, you just see. You're just walking.
That would be so cool. Just twinkle.
Maybe, as long as the twinkle's external and not internal.
Right.
Getting twinkles, like you're just walking down the street and you suddenly have this blinding light filling up your vision for just a second. And you're like, well, that was
am
weird.
I experiencing a visitation?
Especially if the contact lenses weren't synchronized in any way. That would be really distracting. Obviously there's a lot more work to be done here, not just with perfecting the technology, but then going through that whole testing phase as well in actual use cases, right?
Oh, yeah. I think that, and I'd love to do an episode also on EFCs in general, because they've been tested a whole bunch in blood and sweat kind of applications for blood, sweat, and tears, you guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
For other powering electronic sort of purposes. And it's a lot more complex than the classic way of getting electricity out of the human body, which is piezoelectric cells, which transfer motion of some kind into energy, from macro energy, from the steps that you're taking or the Fosse dance moves that you're performing to the micro movements of your heart or your lungs or something.
Or even
like
the
that.
Flow of your blood.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so classic example of one of those materials would be quartz, where you kinetic energy will be converted into electrical output, and vice versa, actually. If you put electricity through it, vibrates the quartz crystal, which is why so many watches rely on quartz crystals. So, let's talk a little bit, to kind of wrap this up about what we think the future is of this. Is this going to be the future of augmented reality and potentially even virtual reality? If you could completely replace someone's vision with a virtual overlay, which may never happen. I mean, I could definitely understand why that would be a bad idea in some cases. You don't want to obscure someone's vision when they're trying to make their way through a physical environment. Personally, I think because we know for a fact these contact lenses are not going to be ready for use for at least a few more years, potentially as far out as a decade, but not to the magical 20 to 40 years that we often cite on this show, that it's not going to be the near-term future of AR. AR, I think, for the next couple of years will focus mainly on headsets like the HoloLens or other comparable pieces of hardware.
Mm-hmm. And not something that you would wear around all the time, but rather something that you specifically put on your face for a practical application and then take off.
Right.
Like, I don't think that any iteration of Google Glass is going to come back anytime really soon.
Yeah, I know that they keep working on it, but I agree. I don't think, unless they make it so that it looks like sunglasses and it has a compelling use, I don't see Google Glass coming back in a way that makes a real impact on the market.
Now, what about something more like the HoloLens?
I think HoloLens will have, HoloLens is being promoted as something that works in conjunction with your computer, and it's meant to be something that you use near the computer Microsoft is being very savvy in that they're looking at what Google did and saying, there are some things we want to avoid. We want to avoid that situation where you encounter a social stigma because someone's wearing a piece of technology on their face out in public, and that is unusual. So it invites lots of issues like ridicule or being uncomfortable around that person because you're afraid that they are recording video of everything they see around them, or maybe even streaming it live now that we have apps that make that incredibly easy to do. The HoloLens instead is supposed to be used within your home or office. So that's one big difference. Another is that, like Lauren was saying, it's really meant for those specific tasks you want to do. And when you're done with it, you take the headset off, whether that's playing a game or maybe watching a movie. Because one of the really cool things I like about the HoloLens is this idea that you can designate a space in your physical surroundings to turn it into essentially a flat screen television.
Uh-huh.
And then when you look away, the TV stays where you put it. And when you look back, you know, it's still there. That's kind of a cool thing. Like, I could imagine that being a way of you upgrade your software on your HoloLens. You don't have to go out and buy a new TV.
Yeah.
That's kind of a cool idea. The thing that really excites me about all this is that this means we're going to see further development of augmented reality, assuming that it gets support in the marketplace. And then by the time these contact lenses are ready for purchase, there will already be a firm infrastructure in place to support AR. So that means that you don't have to wait for the content to be there for the technology to make sense.
Oh, right. That these things would be happening. Fishtailing in development so that they,
right.
they're both, or dovetailing rather, so that they... Yeah, fishtailing is a separate issue.
But yeah,
I mean, yeah, and even if that never comes about, then the health applications alone are really incredible.
Definitely. So even if we never see these contact lenses as displays, the idea of them being able to monitor very closely these kind of various conditions could be a huge benefit to thousands of people. And you know, I know that taking that burden away, where someone doesn't have that, you know, that sense of resignation that they have to draw more blood so that they can test themselves again because, you know, they aren't sure what their glucose levels are. Taking that away so that they are still being monitored safely and can get the treatment they need to manage their condition, to me, is a phenomenal story. And it's definitely one that I'm interested in following. So we will keep our eyes on the contact lenses as opposed to the other way around, and make sure that we follow this development, because I think it has amazing potential. It may take, again, several years for it to make its way through the FDA for approval, but I think it'll have a really positive impact. So it's very exciting stuff. And guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Forward Thinking, maybe there's some technology or maybe some story in science that you would love us to cover. Maybe there's just a question you have about a previous episode, or you have a comment you would like to make. Send it in to us. Our email address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com. Or you can drop us a line on Twitter or Facebook. At Twitter, we are FW Thinking. You can search FW Thinking over at Facebook, and our little account will pop right up. You can just leave us a message there. I think it's pretty safe to say we're going to do a follow-up about gravitational waves, because there might have been some news you may have heard about it recently. That news broke the day that we were going into the studio to record, so we wanted to have enough time to really research that before we do a full podcast on it. But I have a feeling a lot of you out there are going to suggest that, because some of you have done it already on Twitter. But thanks, because that's awesome. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.